from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, according to new census figures released just yesterday, over 6 million Californians are living in poverty. That's up 4% since before the recession began in 2006. Household income fell by the biggest margin on record. Nearly one in four California children are living in poverty. In this opening Forum hour, we turn our attention to poverty, the numbers, and the lives. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In 2010, the California poverty rate jumped to its highest level in 13 years. And according to census figures released just yesterday, state household income dropped 5%, about twice as quick a drop as household income nationwide. Nationwide, some 46.2 million people are living in poverty, according to the census figures. And this past year was the fourth consecutive annual increase in the poverty rate. In all of America, poverty is on the rise, and the single biggest factor is joblessness. And we take on the topic of poverty in this Forum hour. Joining us in studio is Gene Ross, who is executive director of the California Budget Project, public policy research group based in Sacramento. And Gene, good to have you. Good to have you in studio for a change. Welcome to the
program. It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
We also want to welcome Pocho Guevara, who is executive director of Sacred Heart Community Service, an anti-poverty organization. They're based in San Jose. Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thanks, Michael.
Glad to have you, and also want to welcome Amy Durfee, who is Vice President for Community Investment in the North Bay with the United Way of the Bay Area. Joins us from the East Bay this morning. Welcome, Amy Durfee.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning to you. Glad to have you. Let me begin, Gene Ross, with you here in studio, and let's talk about why these numbers are so much higher in California. I mean, it's been hit harder by the recession. That's the most obvious fact, but it's deeper and wider in California, too.
Deeper and wider, and that's because the recession has been deeper and wider in California. We had a larger housing boom, and we had a larger housing bust. And so I think it's no surprise that California has fared worse than the country as a whole. I think all of us who followed the data knew that it was going to be some very, very grim news. I think the magnitude of the drop is significant. When you look, for example, at the decline in the median household income, which is the income of the household at the middle of the California income distribution, largest single year drop here in California. And that really represents what's going on, you know, in the vast middle of California, not the very poor. And that was a very sizable drop. The poverty rate in California, we're now seeing a state where almost one out of four children in California lives in poverty. And I think that has tremendous implications for our future because we know that children who are raised in poverty are less likely to graduate from high school, go on to college, lower lifetime earnings, diminished health status. And there's a very interesting new body of research that shows that that's true even for children who spend a few years in poverty, not just their whole childhood in poverty.
And this is disproportionate in numbers among African Americans and Latinos?
Disproportionate among African Americans, Latinos, and again, among the young. One of the interesting things that's come out, and we can't quite tease this out for California yet, but I think we certainly probably follow the national trend, is the poverty rate would have been even worse had not a lot of young adults moved home with their parents. And that actually kept things from being even worse. And I think that suggests in populations, particularly Latinos, which are younger than the population as a whole, that the true story might be even worse had we not seen this doubling up.
It's like the chasm between the wealthy and the, I mean, it's the old cliche, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and that chasm is opening up wider to sort of obviate a lot of the middle class, or what was the middle class, and there's less of a safety net, budget cutbacks, dropping revenue. I mean, this is certainly a picture that's pretty grim, but let's get to the heart of how we even judge what indeed is poverty. Now, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, you've got these figures of income of a family of four of $22,000, which in the Bay Area, I mean, $22,000 is... You'd need at least three times that, I think, to almost live with some material ease, or not even comfort, but reasonably in the Bay Area. But $11,000 for a single person, and I guess one of the things that is a concern to me is how we define poverty, not only in terms of income, but Forbes magazine says, for example, these numbers in the census that the Census Bureau is putting out don't include Medi-Cal help. They don't include help via the tax system, food stamps, all of these kinds of things, and that ought to be somehow computed.
And I think that's a reasonable approach to take. And in fact, the Census Bureau is developing some alternative measures of poverty. If there is any good news in the data that was released yesterday, it's the fact that there are some public programs that help keep large numbers of Americans, Californians, out of poverty. Unemployment insurance, which extended benefits are slated to expire later this year, nationally kept 3.2 million Americans out of poverty. The Earned Income Tax Credit, which is a supplement to working families, mostly with kids, some single adults, 5.4 million Americans out of poverty. Food stamps again. And I think we need to look at different ways of measuring poverty.
But that safety net is frayed more and more.
More and more, and particularly at the state level, some of the programs. And I think certainly when you look at a $22,000 income for a family of four, that is a much more desperate level of poverty here in California than, say, North Dakota, South Dakota, places where housing in particular is a lot less expensive.
I wonder what you say also to the Heritage Foundation, which put out a statement, and essentially, I mean, it's a conservative organization, and they say that poverty is touted by the liberals, you know, the usual kind of rhetoric. But they give out some statistics that really are, well, at least compelling. 80% of poor households have air conditioning. 92% of poor households have a microwave. Nearly three quarters have a car, a truck. Nearly two thirds have cable or satellite TV, all of these kinds of things. And then they also talk about most poor families, or at least those who are designated as poor, having enough to eat, and most of them having more living space than is typical, for example, in Sweden, France, or the United Kingdom. All these kind of statistics sort of bear down on this.
And certainly it does. It reflects the fact that Americans as a whole have different standards of living than people in other countries. Oftentimes those diets are not adequate diets. They may be high enough in calories, but as many of your guests have talked about over months and years, it may not be a diet that includes sufficient fresh fruits and vegetables, may not be a healthy diet because people are using their limited resources. And again, we do have things like food stamps, which have helped to head off hunger insecurity. And I think that's a tremendously good thing. But again, when you look at the cost of housing, when you look at the gap between the very wealthy and the very poor, and what that means, again, particularly for the one out of four California children in poverty, it is a very, very challenging situation to how we give these kids a good start in life.
That is the most disturbing statistic of all.
Absolutely.
Nearly one in four children in California, according to the Census Bureau figures, in poverty. Gene Ross, again, is Executive Director of the California Budget Project, and Poncho Guevara is Executive Director of Sacred Heart Community Service, an anti-poverty organization based in San Jose, and they are, serving about 18,000 to 20,000 people a month, helping them with employment, with utilities, with food, with shelter. Poncho, you're seeing more problems for families again, aren't you?
Yeah, I think one of the things, Michael, what's been fascinating about this whole kind of period that we've been under for a long time is that it really has come down to being a perfect storm. I mean, we have like three main trends that we've seen. The traditional folks that have been coming to us from the working poor have seen their hours cut, jobs disappear, support networks evaporate, you know, over the last couple of years. A lot of folks have actually left the area. And then we've had hits to the public safety net that have pushed many folks who have been served, you know, by public programs streaming through our doors in unprecedented numbers, including more folks living with depression and mental illness and other issues and things based on what's happened to the cuts in the safety net. And the third have been this group of long-term unemployed, you know, that have been that have really been ensconced in the middle class, who've had stable income, stable housing, reaching out to us for the first time. And we've had to, you know, basically grow tremendously just to be able to meet this influx of new people. I mean, we saw 35,000 people just, you know, a few years ago, and our numbers jumped up to above 50,000, and they are not letting up.
So you've had to grow and you've had to scale up. You've got a lot of people who are coming in who've never come before. But at the same time, you've lost $1 million in local funding and you're getting less money from the city and the state and being threatened as far as cutbacks on the Fed level.
Yeah, it's been really eye-opening to see the changes that have happened. But, I mean, it's not all bad news right now. We have
Please, give us some good news.
Well, I mean, for us, we've actually seen a lot of folks who have been unemployed who want to actually do something, want to just get out of the house. They're just frustrated by sending resumes out there and not getting anything back. And they've, you know, some folks have come out to volunteer. Got corporate groups and, you know, schools and churches and folks saying, I want to do something, and coming out and volunteering and some donating and doing more stuff. It's not made up for the losses that we've had, but it's, to some extent, it's been a little glimmer of hope that people are paying attention to this issue. But I'm still confused why we don't see greater outrage out there over these numbers and the families that have just been devastated by this economic decline.
Well, you also take care of about 20% of the Valley Food Bank and down there in the Silicon Valley. What about hunger? Again, these heritage figures that are being put out suggest that people are just not that hungry because of what they can get in food stamps and the like. Give us a sense of what your feeling is in terms of just general response of people who are coming in. And are they hungrier? Are they more in need of food, literally, and putting stuff on their table?
Well, we have provided for many years, we've provided really a supplementary supply of food, basically food that's really been basically structured so it'd be a three-day supply of food for each family member. They can come up twice a month. But we run now one of the largest food pantries in Northern California. We had over 50,000, you know, folks that came to us literally just for food. And while we've been enrolling people in food stamps, people say that that's really not enough to be able to meet their nutritional requirements. So they for what we consider a supplemental supply, we're finding that many of the families are stretching what should be, you know, over the course of a month, good for about a quarter of their food. For a lot of them, this is half, three quarters of their nutritional allotment. And when they run out of food from what we give them and what they're able to get from, you know, from our food pantry and from others around the county, they're coming to us for like bag lunches and they're feeding their children with it, which is extremely disturbing. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how troubling that is. And with cuts that have come on to our local food bank, great partner in Second Harvest Food Bank, I mean, they're having to cut back on what they've been able to give us because they've experienced tremendous cuts as well. So we're seeing just greater intensity and the duration of folks who are coming to us. People that would come to us two or three times to get a little bit of extra as they're hitting a rough patch are now coming to us for months on end. And it's a greater number, greater duration, a much more diverse population. People that we never thought we'd ever see have come through our doors and are you know humbled by the thought that you know they're going to need to ask for help, and it's just not letting up.
You're also seeing, I imagine, a lot more well, often the phenomenon that is attached to this kind of poverty, domestic violence.
Yeah, in fact, it's been one of the really one of the most unfortunate trends. I mean, we've actually you know added you know the, over the last number of years a domestic violence program because we saw such a great intensity you know of families that are experiencing the duress of this economic recession and you know families just spent that had been stable had things going you know going well and just seeing the toll that it's taken on families. And so you know, we have a support program, and you know, we're providing you know help to folks that have been displaced because of that. And it's really been one of the most unfortunate you know things that we've had, and the impact on kids to actually see their family torn apart, and basically partners staying together or staying in an abusive household because they are afraid of homelessness and the impact on that. And that's been you know, particularly difficult. And even some of the best families that, you know, folks that have actually been doing well over the last several years have been coming back to us, have actually been stabilized, have seen the stress really, you know, take a toll on their families and have come to us. And it's really one of the most discouraging trends that I think we've seen over the last two or three years.
Again, we're talking with Pancho Guevara, who is executive director of the Sacred Heart Community Service, an anti-poverty organization located in San Jose. Amy Durfee is vice president for community investment with the North Bay United Way of the Bay Area. Amy, you want to try to cut poverty by about a half during the next decade? And we're hearing about this perfect storm and how grim things are. Are you optimistic that you can actually reach that goal?
Well, we are optimistic. I mean, the problems are so severe at this point that we've got to think big and we've got to think about how the systems work that keep people in poverty. I do want to go back to the point specifically related to the North Bay about how you define poverty. And, you know, you were saying that the definition of poverty from the federal poverty line is about $22,000 for a family of four and how low that is. For example, in Solano County, a family of four would need about $59,000 a year just to pay for food, housing, child care, medical insurance, transportation. And and we know that there are about 20% of the families in Solano County who have incomes below that level. And so I guess what I'm saying is that even though the numbers from the census are so horrifying, we actually know that the problem is much worse for people who are working in low-wage jobs. The, you know, in Solano County, you need a car to get to work. You need air conditioning. And so all of those, you know, the points from the Heritage Foundation about, well, it kind of seems like it's not so bad. Actually, you know, people are really struggling. And in order to survive, in order to just have one or two or three part-time minimum wage jobs, that's not enough to pay for basic needs. And we're really seeing families struggling, but we're hoping that by looking at the bigger picture, looking at the types of integrated services, pulling organizations together, pulling systems together, and really starting a new conversation in this region, in this state, about this issue, we hope that we can actually make a big dent.
Well, to make a big dent, you're going to have people back at work, and you're also going to have another stream of revenue. I mean, we have less property tax, we have a diminished amount of revenue, a source of revenue, and those are the two big obstacles that we're facing.
Yeah, here. I mean, we definitely see that. So in Solano County, Vallejo and Fairfield have been on the top, they're still on the top 10 list nationally for foreclosure. And so we have, as you're saying, a declining source of county revenue. Many of the nonprofits in that county get some of their core funding from the public sector. And so it's this kind of spiral where the nonprofits are doing, you know, they're doing their job with less. But, you know, it's not, money is a huge part of it, and revenue is obviously an incredibly significant part of changing the system. And I also want to say that part of it is about families reaching out. It's about, you can't solve this problem with volunteers, but that is a major element of it. I agree with you. We need to find a new revenue stream. We need to put this on the top of the priority list for our policymakers.
We could theoretically be losing a whole generation here, though. And again, I don't want to sound apocalyptic or doomsday-ish or like Cassandra or anything, but we're cutting per pupil spending 20% from K to 12. It's worse for African Americans and Latinos in terms of what we've said poverty affliction means. The whole sense of almost one in four children being in poverty now in California and not having the opportunity of education as a way to perhaps move forward or move up, if you will, just seems like we're getting manacled from every source imaginable here.
Yeah,
I'm struck by your optimism in the light of this. I mean, I love hearing the optimism, but I'm wondering where it comes from.
Well, you know, we don't have a choice. You're right; we are losing a generation of kids, and you know, we're talking about programs and infrastructures and revenue streams, but it's those kids that are suffering. And when we look at our economic health in this region, kids being literate, having basic skills, graduating from high school, and being able to attract a work, to attract economic opportunities to this region because we have a qualified workforce, it's all connected. That that it is an investment in our future to focus on cutting poverty, that it's an investment in the economic health of our region.
Again, Amy Durfee is with us this morning from the East Bay. She's Vice President for Community Investment in the North Bay with United Way of the Bay Area. Keisha Nzewe is Advocacy Manager with the Alameda County Community Food Bank, and we have her on the line here. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
I want to get a picture from you again about hungry people. Are they out there in greater numbers? Are they coming to you in greater numbers, and are they simply not able to put food on their tables?
People are definitely coming to us in greater numbers. We feed 1 in 6 Alameda County residents in every corner of our county, and that's 49,000 people per week. We've seen a 23% increase since 2006, but just this summer we've fielded more calls than we ever have. Last month in August, we fielded 3,754 calls to our emergency food helpline, and that equaled 12,200 individuals. And that was the highest ever by 260 calls.
And what about your resources? Are they getting cut back also?
We're very fortunate to have an extremely strong base here in our county, a strong base of support, and we are seeing more and more support, but where we are seeing cutbacks is from government cuts and cuts to the safety net, which then brings more and more people to our doors as their support systems are being cut.
And talk about the people. I mean, is it a cross-section? Are you getting more people of color? What?
Oh, it's you cannot put one single face to hunger. It's everyone. It's probably your neighbor. As I mentioned, 1 in 6 Alameda County residents, and they're coming from every corner of our county. 42% of the folks that we help have at least one working adult in their household.
Keisha Nzewe, again, is Advocacy Manager for the Alameda County Community Food Bank, and I'm appreciative of your being with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for allowing us to speak.
And before we go to the break here, Gene Ross, just maybe a note of optimism. We're supposed to be in recovery now, aren't we?
We're slowly moving into recovery. These are data that look at what happened in 2010, although 2011 won't be much better and could potentially be a little bit worse. I think I want to go back to optimism because I think we do have to look forward. California is still one of the 10 largest economies in the world. We are still in the United States of America. And I think we need to look long-term and say, what kind of a society do we want to live in? What kind of an economy do we want to live in? We have the ability to make investments. I think the president's jobs package, for example, taking some modest steps, I think arguably they could have been larger steps, but a smart way to pay for some of those programs. And again, I think, as you said, we're not going to turn things around until we have jobs. And we've got to keep our eye on the ball. We need to keep a strong safety net. As the nation moves towards trying to balance the federal budget, we need to look at the pledge that Bowles, Simpson, the Gang of Six in the Senate, and others have made not to reduce spending that would push people into poverty.
And again, we are talking about poverty this hour, and we welcome your phone calls. We invite you to join the program and join the conversation. You can do that now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. And again, feel free to call us. Toll-free number, 866-733-6786. If you have a question or a comment to contribute to the conversation, you can also join us by email. Our email address, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. Talking with Gene Ross of the California Budget Project, Pocho Guevara of the Sacred Heart Community Service, and Amy Durfee of United Way of the Bay Area. When we return, we'll hear from you. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. More than 6 million Californians are presently living in poverty. That's according to new figures from the U.S. Census Bureau. And that's up more than 4% since before the recession began in 2006. Household income fell by the biggest margin on record, and nearly 1 in 4 California children is living in poverty. In this hour, we're looking at the numbers and the lives of those who are feeling the impact. We have Gene Ross here with us in studio, Executive Director of the California Budget Project, which is a public policy research group based in the state capital, Sacramento. And Pocho Guevara is with us as well by phone, Executive Director of the Sacred Heart Community Service, anti-poverty organization in San Jose. And Amy Durfee, Vice President for Community Investment in the North Bay with United Way of the Bay Area. We also spoke with Keisha Nzewe, Advocacy Manager for the Alameda County Food Bank, and we're going to speak with you, getting some emails and web comments. Let me just read a couple here, and you can email us forum@kqed.org or post your comments or questions on our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. There's somebody commenting on the figures I read from the Heritage Foundation. 80% of poor homes have microwave ovens. What clueless fool wrote this? Microwave ovens have sold for $30, often less than the price of a toaster for years. That's luxury. By the way, the Heritage also put out, I just gave a sampling, but just a few of their figures just to put in the mix here. They say that half of poor people have a personal computer. 1 in 7 have 2 or more computers. More than half of poor families with children have a video game system such as Xbox or PlayStation, and 43% have internet access. But another listener says, this is Max, having spent 8 years living in West Oakland, having seen the homes of my poorest neighbors, yeah, they do have fridges, satellite, TV, microwaves. You know what they often don't have? Furniture. Seriously. They're also wearing donated clothes, eating from a dwindling donated food supply. Another thing that very few poorer Americans have is health care, particularly preventative care. And, of course, one of the reasons we can all afford rent in West Oakland is that we've decided to tolerate a violent environment where kids get shot all too regularly. Further, I'd like your guests to comment on how undocumented migrants fit into the statistics. As a professional builder, I've heard some astounding horror stories about bunk rooms being built into garages in East Oakland to house undocumented laborers. Michael's comment about the federal poverty line being meaningless in the Bay Area is spot on. The Heritage Foundation is being wantonly misleading. Well, let's talk just for a moment with Eugene Ross about how immigrants, and particularly undocumented immigrants, fit into these numbers.
That's a question the Census Bureau doesn't ask, but I think everything we know in terms of poverty being much higher among Latinos, particularly young Latinos, would suggest that the poverty rate is much, much higher. We know that a lot of the industries that undocumented workers have been disproportionately employed in, construction primarily.
The building trades.
Building trades, construction, very hard hit during the downturn. And so I think everything that we know about what's going on in our economy would suggest that some very dire conditions going on there. And I think some of the Heritage statistics also point out what's going on in this economy is we have a lot of people who used to be middle-income working families, backbone of our communities, who have slid into poverty because they lost a job, maybe in construction, maybe in retail.
Not only job losses, of course, wages have been cut and hours have been cut.
Work hours are at record low levels. And so they may have some of the things they purchased during better times that they've kept as they've slid into poverty.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think those numbers are misleading.
And so I think they're misleading.
Yeah. I mean, we'll go to our callers, and we'll go to a caller in Twin Peaks first. Bob, join us. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. I just want to make a statement, and I'll hear your answer off the air. I'm 63. I had a viable job in San Francisco, actually running a construction office. I lost my job. I ran out of unemployment. Luckily, I turned 62 in April, and I was able to tap into my Social Security. My Social Security is $1,095 a month. Too much to get food stamps, but too little to pay rent. So what I did is I used my head. I'm a baby boomer, so I know how to, you know, live on very little. I had bought a van, took the seats out of it, and I've lived in my van for almost 2 years. That is the only way that I would be able to survive. And I'll take whatever comment you want to make off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for that call. Pocho Guevara, that caller represent some of what you're seeing?
Yeah, in fact, we're seeing a lot of that. What's fascinating, there was a family that we just met a few weeks ago that, you know, they owned their home remodeling business, and they took they built it up over 20 years, and they saw their sales dry up in 2010, and they've been teetering for a while. Mike has just been getting occasional work. Monica has been home with her three beautiful kids, but you know, they aren't able to pay their bills, and recently they had to sell their company's space and their inventory. They've been teetering. Unemployment, was, running out and had run out. And with the school year approaching, they lined up with, hundreds of other families at 5:30 a.m. for the chance to sign up for backpacks for their kids here at Sacred Heart. And, it was devastating for them because these were employers. These were folks that were, like I said, fully ensconced in the middle class, have been doing everything, doing everything right, but trying to make ends meet and worried about homelessness. And, that's just a stark reality for literally hundreds, and thousands of folks that we're seeing, and especially in a high-cost area like Silicon Valley, where it's very difficult to be able to compete and survive. You can't weather some of those bumps, with an increasing, rental market, in fact, because of the people that have been displaced by their mortgage crisis. You've seen a lot of families that have been kicked out into the rental market, and we've actually seen increasing rental prices, and it's hurting everyone. So the ripple effects, for folks that have been doing really well, like your caller, really have an impact on everyone else.
The percentage of homelessness, Amy Durfee, certainly for families has gone up. Overall, though, are you seeing more people having to live in their cars, live in their vans, that sort of thing, like we heard from that last caller?
Yeah, I definitely think that's happening a lot more, and especially out. So I'm in Solano County, Napa County, Marin County. I live in Contra Costa. All these areas, homelessness looks very different than it does in downtown San Francisco. And I think it's more challenging to address. So you've got people living in cars. We know from the census data that we have more, there are 2 million more people across the country who are doubling up now and living with relatives or living with friends. And that's another kind of homelessness that I think shows up really differently in more suburban or rural areas of our region.
Let's bring on more of our callers, and we'll go to you, Susan. Welcome. You're on the air.
I am disabled, and my sole support is from the government. And I am using food banks in San Francisco and do not believe that they will be funded in the future based on the 12 people that are going to be deciding. I honestly believe that I'm going to be out on the streets, and I do not have any resources to fall back on or any family or friends to fall back on. And I am one of many people that see what you call apocalyptic society coming towards us, and I'm already living in hunger and very nearly homeless.
Gene Ross, get a comment from you in response to this caller.
One of the things that we've seen happen in response to the deep budget cuts at particularly the state level is a reduction in cash assistance level for people like your caller, for low-income families with children in our Welfare to Work program. And for most of those individuals, most of those families, their cash assistance check really becomes a rent check. That's a problem. I think one thing that maybe a lot of your listeners don't realize is people like Susan don't get food stamps. If you are a younger family with kids, food stamps provide a tremendous benefit that helps keep people somewhat out of hunger, although, as your other guest said, oftentimes not enough. And there is a real threat to some of the elderly. And we see the nonprofit sector, charitable giving is being taxed by the depth of the economic downturn. People who want to give, maybe volunteer, but don't have the money to donate that they might have had in better times.
There's another factor here, though, that I suppose needs at least some glossing from my perspective, and that is you've got a political ideology on the right, and I'm not only talking about the Tea Party. I'm talking about those for whom any kind of government assistance or government aid is anathema.
And I think that's a real struggle. And I think one of the real sea changes with welfare reform in the 1990s was a social compact that said, we want you to work, but we're going to help you get a job. We're going to help you with the child care that you won't be able to afford once you go into the workforce. And we've seen a tremendous erosion. When you have 11% unemployment like we do here in California, jobs are tough even for people with a college degree and a stellar work history. We've seen people blow through their unemployment insurance, discrimination against the jobless. The percentage of the working age population in California that's employed is at its lowest level on record. Those are the formerly unemployed, and that includes the discouraged workers who aren't measured in that 11% number. We need jobs.
I'm going to go to some of your comments. This is from Facebook. We should seriously consider reducing our phobia of socialistic concepts. These would include A, much stronger social safety net at the expense of corporations that do business here. B, free public education and training. Not everyone needs to get a university education, but everyone needs to be trained at least in some vocation. Public programs should be funded by reducing the federal taxes of our citizenry. Instead, we should pool these saved taxes in building hospitals and schools. We need to tax the very rich at a slightly higher rate than we do currently. The middle class has nothing more to give. And another listener from his iPhone, Bruce in Oakland, writes, what happened to the bright future where machines would do much of the work and people would have more leisure time? Well, machines are doing more of the work, but unfortunately, inequalities still run deep and greed reigns supreme. Bring back the public works and arts programs. Invest in education and health care. We can build a better future. We need to look to the long-term possibilities and not just next quarter's profit. And another listener, Dee in Belmont, writes, perhaps we should reconsider how we define poverty beyond income and include assets, years of work history, household income, debt levels, education, etc. We all know income is just one measure of poverty or wealth. Technology allows us to gather this information now and truly measure the big picture in order to reach the truly needy and plan accordingly. And on we go to more of your phone calls. Let's go to Sonora. Patty, welcome. You're on.
Good morning. This is Patty. I'm a workers' comp nurse, and I manage catastrophic and serious injuries. And what I've seen is the demand for increased productivity has really put a burden on workers, and there's many more injuries because of that. And because there's so many workers available, after 6 weeks of light duty, many workers are found without jobs. And the other piece of it is that the productivity standards are also found in the medical care system, so that workers are getting very, very sloppy medical care. They get 10 minutes of evaluation. It's poor history taking. And so they're finding themselves told that they ought to go back to work when they have serious injuries that don't seem to fall within the parameters of a CT scan or an MRI. They still have pain. They still have problems. I see many, many of my patients losing their homes, losing their opportunities, and these are people that have been with companies sometimes for 7, 8 years. I'd like your guests to come.
Well, actually, I should mention, we just did a program on medical debt, and it's staggering. I mean, there's just no way around it, and those numbers, of course, are going up all the time, and they're putting people at enormous financial risk, if not into bankruptcy in greater numbers. Anybody want to comment on this?
This is Amy.
Amy, go ahead.
United
Amy
Way.
Duffy.
Yeah. So the caller has brought up something which I think is essential to understand, which is all of these issues are so interrelated. And what often happens is in our social service system, so the services are all spread out. They're all kind of siloed. And what we're trying to do at United Way is bring them together. We've put together SparkPoint centers all over the Bay Area where people can come and get information about building their assets, fixing their credit score, managing their debt, getting on public benefits, getting a bank account, all in one place. And these are organizations that have agreed to work with families over the long term and bringing in other supports, like what you're saying about dealing with injuries on the job and all the things that enter a family's life that have to really be addressed for them to be able to get back on their feet.
We go to more of your calls. We go next to Davis. Doug, join us. You're on.
Yeah, hi. I just had a question for the folks that are on the show. I wondered if there was any data that showed that there was a correlation with family size and poverty, and if there is any data that shows that there's a correlation between family size and poverty. If there's any, sort of policies about family planning. It just seems that a lot of funding for family planning has been under threat, and I didn't know if that was an issue with poverty levels here.
You know about this, Jean Ross?
The poverty level is measured by family size, so it's a little bit higher, although probably not enough higher to reflect the added cost of raising a child. And I think the caller points to some of the erosion in public health coverage programs that we've seen. I think the federal health law, which will take effect in 2014, offers some promise. I think one of the good things that has happened during this downturn is some of the federal so-called maintenance of effort requirements have kept health coverage, health care eligibility in place during the downturn. Tremendous drop in job-based health coverage. And we know that when people lose their health coverage, they don't get the health care that they need. And that includes preventive health services such as family planning.
Let me thank the caller. Another caller on health insurance. That's you, Laura. Hi.
Hi. Sorry, I'm getting some feedback. My husband had to take a job that doesn't have health insurance, and so we've been paying COBRA with a really high deductible. And recently my daughter had a pretty bad accident, and I basically had to make the judgment call of whether to take her to an emergency room or have a month more of COBRA payments in our bank account. So luckily it worked out for the best, but it was very stressful to have to make that decision.
Which, I take it you went to the emergency room?
No, I decided not to. I looked at it and I said, I don't think it needs stitches, and, put antiseptic on it and wrapped it up in sterile gauze and, and she looks like she's okay. So
well, I'm glad. I'm glad things worked out for you. Again, we did the show on medical debt, and COBRA came up, and the high cost of COBRA came up. And unfortunately, of course, all these costs medically are going up, which contributes to what we've been talking about here, which the whole hour is poverty. Another caller from Palo Alto. Ann, join us. Hi.
Hi. First of all, thanks so much for having me on the program. I love your program, Michael. It's wonderful. I have been feeling so strongly that the thing that got California in this horrible state that it's in is Prop 13. And I only wish we managed to be lucky enough to buy our house just about 6 months before it went into effect. I really would love to be the first to sign on the line to add whatever we are saving to the state of California if other people would do the same. I'd love nothing more to see Prop 13 be turned back and get some fairness into our system. Again, our educational system used to be, almost number one, and all of a sudden it went down to next to, number 48, 49, insanity from people who just couldn't care less about the next generation or anything that happened beyond their little tight little pocketbooks. Taxes are too high without even considering the implications of what those taxes were paying for. So I'll take my answer off the air. You can hear my boiling point, and I think that could be the answer to so many of this state's problems.
Well, thank you, Ann, for your call, and thank you for your kind remarks. I don't think we're going to see Prop 13 back, though, are we?
Although I think we are at a point, both at the federal level over the federal budget balancing efforts in the next several months, here in California, I think over the next year, about how do we bring in the resources that are necessary to invest in education, invest in higher education and the infrastructure we need for a healthy economy. I think certainly changes to Prop 13 are one thing under consideration. There's some others, and I hope your caller will talk to friends, families, colleagues, and spread the word.
And let me bring you back into this conversation, Pancho Guevara. The sense that we're getting here is not only more people in need, but more people, when somebody calls in, for example, says, I'm living in a van now, and other people call in and say, I have no place, and more kids are living at home than ever before. The problem is a roof over the head. Are you finding that has become a much greater problem with those who are impoverished?
Well, clearly it's been, we've just seen just greater desperation from folks that have been, you know, in the ranks of the chronically unemployed, and you've seen, you know, every factor that's coming out. And it's interesting kind of hear like the breadth of these callers, because we're seeing those folks lining up out in front of Sacred Heart every day. And the kind of families that had, you know, like I said, had been stable, have been trying to make ends meet, have good networks and support systems, those things are just become, you know, very much exhausted. And with the cuts of the public sector, we're seeing just, you know, so much more of that. But I think what I really appreciated about the last caller was the sense that some people are starting to get it. Some people are starting to say, look at the situation that we're facing right now as outrageous, that, you know, we need to be doing it. Everyone needs to be called to act and sacrifice. There's been so much sacrifice that's taken place already. But, you know, where's the sense of kind of the community coming together and saying we want to do something about it?
Where's the grassroots outrage? Are you getting some of that with people who are coming in, especially people who have been dispossessed and find themselves out of work when they had a fairly decent life?
Oh, absolutely. They're coming in with, I mean, both a sense of desperation and a sense of not just desperation and hopelessness, but a sense of like, you know, why is this happening to me? I mean, I had a 45-minute conversation with someone who was just outraged at her situation and just needed to let out some steam because she feels so isolated and so humiliated by, you know, by the fact that she hasn't been able to have consistent work for 2 years. And that, the implications of that for a whole generation of folks, like her kids and so many other families, is tremendous. But where do they have the space to talk about it, to organize, to actually be involved in change and raising and you know, raising their voice? And that's something that we're starting to do a bit at Sacred Heart, and other organizations are really looking at the situation. We can't provide services. We can't service our way out of poverty. We have to be looking at social solutions and kind of a renewed social compact that has eroded tremendously. To be honest, I was a little bit taken aback by, you know, bringing in all the information about, from the Heritage Foundation, because they're not really part of a real dialogue that's happening in this community about real families and the real issues. And what are we trying to protect here? I mean, who's really in control? And how do we own our entire society and look at the implications of a lost generation of families, of kids? One out of two Latino kids in Santa Clara County are living under the federal poverty level.
You are listening to Forum, by the way, and we're talking with Poncho Guevara, also with Amy Durfee and Gene Ross. And this is fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we go to another caller, and that's a caller from Vallejo. Tad, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing this morning?
Okay.
Well, I've got a couple questions/comments. One, I'm kind of curious when the breaking point is going to come for lower-income people on the right who have managed to consistently vote against their own economic interests over the last 20-odd years. And if anyone's starting to see some of that happen on the ground level. I myself had spoken to someone the other day who was in their 40s and, you know, firmly believed that poverty was a moral thing, and who did everything right in their life and made all the correct decisions and went to the right school and was responsible in their personal life, and just can't understand why they're out of work. But this person has voted for Republicans consistently since Reagan's first term. I'm just kind of curious when the breaking point is going to come.
I don't think anybody here has a crystal ball on that score. It's going to have to stand as a rhetorical question, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I'll say is that I'm encouraging everyone to sue Congress for a breach of social contract. And on that, I'll let you guys comment.
Well, all right. Thank you for the call. Actually, here's Paul from Oakland who comments, I'd love every legislator to give up their per diem and spend a month or two living on a food stamp income just so they can see how much work it is to survive. There's a thought, Gene Ross.
I think there have been a number of state legislators who have taken the so-called food stamp challenge. And I think if you look at what they have said, that it's very, very tough for people to make ends meet on a food stamp budget, which is just over a dollar a day for individuals in California. It's hard to get a healthy diet.
Jonathan joins us from San Jose. Jonathan, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Michael. My question concerns me or callers like myself who have been blessed with more fortunate circumstances. Certainly, there's a myriad of options for how we can help, whether financially or volunteerism or even something as simple as donating food. But I was curious, among your guests, if they had any more concrete recommendations of really how we can help. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. I would imagine, Amy Durfee, you would mention the United Way, and Pocho Guevara would mention Sacred Heart Community. But in a general sense, there are a lot of places to go to help, and no dearth of them. And the caller mentioned the two most important, perhaps, as well as the third, and that is money, support, obviously, volunteer work, and donating things like food. Amy?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I think also educating our friends, families, and communities about the reality of poverty, of inequality, and of our public budget situations.
Can I get you on the record here as we come to the Pocho?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think there are tremendous opportunities to get involved. In fact, I was speaking with a group of friends and organizations that work in Gilroy and you know, Mountain View this morning, and we were talking about we need more volunteers, we need more financial contributions, but also to be looking at you know, different kinds of policy. There's AB6 that you know, Assemblymember Jim Bell, that's going to streamline food stamp access. You know, getting involved, writing a letter, like letting our legislators know, but getting involved in our community, mentoring a child, like working in a food pantry, these types of things really are a way of you know, renewing our community.
And there's a lot to be said for that kind of citizen public service. I'm glad that we have served the public this hour, I believe, in terms of talking about this issue and at least bringing it to the fore. I want to thank all of you who participate. Pocho Guevara, again, is Executive Director of the Sacred Heart Community Service. Amy Durfee, Vice President for Community Investment in the North Bay with United Way of the Bay Area. And Gene Ross here in our studio with us, Executive Director of the California Budget Project. Thank you one and all. And thanks also to Keisha Nzewe, whom we spoke to earlier, Advocacy Manager for the Alameda County Community Food Bank. Another forum hour coming your way, and in the hour ahead, we're going to talk with Khaled Husseini, author of the international bestseller, published in 70 countries and made into a film and made into a play and now made into a graphic novel, The Kite Runner. We'll talk with him about this new graphic novel of his, but we'll also talk with him about Afghanistan, and I hope you'll join us for the hour ahead. You can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or calling our listener call-in response line at 415-553-3300. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our producers are Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, thank you again for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.